Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Sabbe dhamma nalang abhinivesayati. That gatha, very famous saying of the Buddha, that all dhammas are not worth clinging to. Or rather, you might translate it as there's not any dhammas anywhere worth attaching to. And this is a good saying for when we are practicing our meditation. Because you all know that the way of meditation is letting go. And if you're not letting go, it means you're attaching to something. You're clinging on to something. You're hanging on to something. And that's the reason why the meditation doesn't get very, very deep. Always, if your mind doesn't go into jhanas, it means that there's some attachment there. There's some clinging. And so that the path of meditation which we're practicing here, which aims for the very highest, which aims for the jhanas, also starts to uncover on the way into these deep states all these very, very subtle attachments, all these subtle cravings. It starts to show you what the asavas, these outflowings of the mind, truly are, and the problem of these things, and how they're overcome. So when I teach in this way, always encouraging people to get into these jhanas, it's not just for the sake of the joy and the bliss of those states, although the joy and the bliss of the jhanas is very well worth aiming for. It would be a great achievement of your monastic life. I said that word very carefully. There are some things to achieve, and that's a worthwhile achievement. But it's not just gaining that achievement, it's just what you understand on the way, how you gain those states themselves. Because on the path into the deep states of meditation, you'll come across many obstacles, and those obstacles are teaching you what attachments truly are, what real craving is. Too many people, if they only meditate superficially, will only know the superficial cravings and attachments, the sorts of things which everybody knows. Everybody knows the attachments to sensuality, to nice food, to sex, to movies. Everybody knows the fear of things like death and the fear of pain. But to be a Buddhist monk who's going for the highest goal of enlightenment itself, that's not enough. Very many of the monks here, they don't really care too much what they eat. They've already given up sex and movies. They've pretty much abandoned much to do with their body, but still, we can't take that last step and go into the jhanas. Why not? Because the subtlest of the defilements is still lingering there. It's as if these are the essence of defilements, the essence of craving, the essence of attachment. And this is what's stopping us going deeper. And if one can actually come across that essence and understand just where the fundamental attachments and cravings are coming from, what they actually are, if you can cut those, you can cut all of the defilements off. That's why just that last step into the jhanas is perhaps the most profound, the most difficult, but also the richest in terms of the gaining of insight. Because there you really find just the last of the attachments, the last of the cravings, the most refined ones. And once you know the refinedest one, then you'll also understand the coarsest one. If you can cut and destroy, even just temporarily, the subtlest of the cravings and attachments, then the coarser ones become easy for you. Which is why the path into jhana is so conducive of the cutting of all the defilements. It's so conducive to stream winning, to once returning, non-returning, even arahat itself. So So let's actually see what those attachments are, what those cravings are. You know that the craving of karma upadana, so the attachment, the grasping of the five sense world, and with it the body, is just, it's not just the craving for sensuality as people know it, but it's also the craving for interest in that world. Sometimes when you go into the deeper states of meditation, where you've got a nimitta coming up and everything is going very well, why is it that sounds could interrupt you? Why is it that even feelings in the body can sometimes disturb those states? Why is it that you can't just let go and just allow the mind just to go in on itself, to be with a beautiful nimitta in the mind, a reflection of the mind, and go deeper into it and enter a jhana itself? And as Ajahn Chah said so profoundly, it's not that the sounds disturb you, but you disturb the sound. It's not the body itches or aches, but you go looking for that itch, you go looking for that pain. The thing is that that's called karma dhanho or karma upadana or even karma asawa. The asawas, if you heard me saying before, is this movement of the mind which you can discern in deep meditation, which goes out of itself into the world. The path of meditation is going in the opposite direction to the asawas. It goes inwards, yoniso manasikara, the work of the mind which goes into the source of things. The asawas go in the opposite direction. They go out into the world. It's as if you're sitting meditation and you're getting quite peaceful. You're going inside of yourself in the cave of the heart, as it says in the Sutta Nipata. Deep within oneself, within the moment, within silence, within the breath, within the nimitta. You go right inside of yourself and then the mind just wants to go out somewhere. It flows out into the body. And with it flows out into sound, out into feeling. You can actually perceive that happening in these deep meditations. You're getting so still, and then a sound is heard. That sound has got nothing to do with you. It might be the sound of a bird, it might be the sound of the wind banging something. What's that to do with you? Why is it that you hear that? The reason you hear that is because the mind has gone out looking for it in the first place. It's gone out looking for something to disturb itself. It's gone out, and that's the function of the asavas. Why has it gone out? Because we're interested in this. That interest is enough to call it karma chanda, or even karma dhanha, the craving. Just the mere interest in it is the subtlest form of that craving. And it's the fuel which keeps the mind going towards the body. Upadana also means fuel. It's the taking up of the body. And you can see it's the asavas go out and take up this body. It's the outflowings of the mind go out into the world of sound and take it up to disturb itself. What's the root of all this? As you've heard me say before, upadana has two ends. It's not just what you cling to, it's what's doing the clinging. Craving also has two ends, not just the object of your craving, but what is doing the craving. Asavas, what's going out, to what, why, what motivates this, what causes it. Buddhism is always the science of cause and effect, especially in the realm of the mind. And eventually you see very clearly that that which pushes the asavas out, that which is on this end of the craving and the clinging, is this illusion of self. At this particular point, it is the dua. That which does, that which controls, that which wants to manifest its being by activity. To do is to be. When you're inactive, it's like death. Which is why those deep states of meditation is like a death of the self. It's the death of the self, because that part of the self we call the doer, the actor, the builder, the maker, the will, the chooser, the complainer, that dies temporarily in the jhanas. And it's because that doesn't want to die that we get all these asavas, these cravings and these clingings which go out into the world. The doer wants to do something. If it doesn't do anything, it's not there anymore. So this is what happens when we get in deep meditation. We just want to do something. We usually go out into the world of the five senses because that's where we usually play. It's a playground of the doer. You can notice this even in the coarser stages of your monastic life. Now as a rains retreat, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to write letters, you don't have to go on the telephone, you don't have to do anything. Why is it we keep doing things? Why is it we have projects? So I'll tell you why you have projects, because of the doer inside of you. It's screaming, I want to be, I want to live, I want to do something to express my illusory existence. The stronger that illusion is, the more active you will be in this monastery. The more things you will be doing, the more you'll be on the telephone, the more you'll be writing letters, the more projects you'll be doing. And it's interesting to see that a person who's given up that doing just doesn't do very much, hardly does anything at all. And that's why in Buddhism they call that the Santamuni, the silent sage, the peaceful one. They haven't got projects, they're not doing things anymore, because they don't have to. That whole movement of activity, what causes activity, what causes you to go out into the world has been cut off, has dried up and is no longer there. Some of us have to do things. I'm the abbot, I have to give a talk, I have to do these things. But do you need to do those things? So when we look to see why we're so active, you can actually see it's just this arsawas, this going out into the world that wants to express the illusion of self. Which is why that a bit of reflection on anatta, we're just charging the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, one of the most beautiful suttas in the whole of the Pali Canon. That whether it's the Rupa Kanda, the body, whether it's the Kandas of the mind, none of it is you, neither the most refined form or the grossest form. It's all nothing to do with you. When there's no one in there, and you realize there's no one in there, when you're looking to see what you take to be yourself and uncover it to be an illusion, a stupidity, a mistaking of this process, when you see there's nothing in there, the more you see there's nothing in there, the less obsession you will have in doing things. You'll become a calmer, more peaceful person in the world. You'll only do if you're asked to, if you have to. But it won't be coming from this idea of expressing yourself, of being somebody, the illusion of the self. And you will know that because when it's the time to be peaceful, you can stop all your activities and just go into your hut and do absolutely nothing. The mind will not go out into the world. It won't go out into fantasies. It won't go out into planning or memories. It won't go out even into just reading books or writing letters. Because it doesn't want to go out anymore. The nature of the mind, when it knows its empty nature, is to stay home, to stay inside. One reason for that is because that's where the happiness is. There's no happiness to be found out there in the world. There's no fulfillment to be found in projects, or in writing, or in even building monasteries. As soon as you build a monastery, it all starts to disintegrate, fall into disrepair. All the great plans, all the great monuments, all the great achievements of the world are just nothing, they just fade away. It's worthless, the world. So why go out into the world and just add more to the jumble of things going on? Instead we just stay at home. The asavas get cut off. Imagine what happens if you cut off the asavas. If you don't take up anything in the world, there's no craving for the sensory world. There's no uptaking, no upadana, no fuel. When you don't take up the body and the five senses, it just disappears. What happens is you just let go of past and future. You let go of words. You let go of the body. You let go of the breath. The whole thing disappears because you're not taking up the world of the five senses. You're not taking up the body. You're not even taking up the body for contemplation of Kaya Gatasati. You're completely renouncing that body. Kaya Gatasati has got the purpose of lessening, weakening those attachments so you can put it down and throw it away. It's called Pati Nisarga, renouncing, relinquishing this body. Nekamma, relinquishment, renunciation. We let go of this body in meditation completely. It's such a wonderful thing to be able to do, to put down this body. As you get older, it gets more heavy, more leaden. It can't sort of bend itself as it used to. But if you just sit it down and get into samadhi quickly, just the body just disappears. And that's the time you have real happiness, bodily happiness, called kaya prasadi. Not just tranquility of the body, but settling the whole body business, fixing it, fixing the problem by just leaving it alone, until the whole body consciousness disappears, until you can't feel the body at all. There's no feeling of the feet, the knees, the back, or the head, or anything. The body's disappeared. What a great relief that is. And you can't hear anything. You can't see, smell, taste. Those five senses have been subdued to nothing. All you've got left is the mind. What a relief. But when that happens to you, why is it that? As soon as it happens, you go out and pick up something of the body again. You go and pick up a sound. It is because the sense of self has been scared. The doer has been caught out, and it immediately wants to reassert itself by going out to listen to something. It says, I've got to hear something, I've got to feel something. If I don't hear something, if I don't feel something, something's going to go terribly wrong. It's a fear of the self being seen for what it is, an empty illusion. This is why the fear can come up at that time of the meditation, and you should be able to see that and spot that before the mind starts to wobble and go off into sound or go off into body consciousness. You should see the fear there of not being too sure of this state of tranquility. What you're seeing there is the asavas in motion. You're seeing craving be born, and you see this terrible upadana which picks up things just out of habit, out of obsession, out of fear. We're supposed to be letting go. We're supposed to be throwing things away. But upadana, the uptaking, goes in the opposite direction. We let go so much, we give up, throw things away. Say, I don't care, I can sit here even the body dies, I don't care. Doesn't matter what pain, I'm just going to throw away this body and not look after it at all. You sit down and it all goes, and then you take it up again. What a shame. But at least you know what's going on. There's a fear there, and the fear leads to the uptaking, upadana being born, and leads to craving arising. The fear was born of the illusion of self, from avijja. When you start to see through this, understand it, you can actually understand how to overcome it. One of the great antidotes to fear is the power called bliss. The more happiness you have, the more power of the mind, the more fearless you become. It comes to a point you're just having such a good time that you're strong. The bliss, the piti sukha, makes you sometimes superman or superwoman. And at that time, even though the mind feels a bit uncertain about what's going to happen next, you're letting go so much. The doer has started to be suppressed. You get into weird states because you're not used to having the doer disappeared. You're always used to being in control. You're always used to being there. And now it's all disappearing. But the bliss becomes so strong that you're willing to allow the self to die temporarily. This is why that I keep encouraging bliss in meditation. This evening I was looking up one of the quotes and I came across another quote which is a very, very beautiful quote. If you want happiness, you have to give up sensuality. Give up karma. This is not karma action, but karma the five sense world. K long A-M-A. The more you give up the five sense realm, the more sukha you have. If you really want to get full sukha, you have to fully give up the five sense realm. I wrote that quote down, but unfortunately I never wrote the reference. It's there somewhere in the suttas. Perhaps somebody can tell me exactly where it is, because it's a beautiful quote. The point is, the more you abandon that five sense realm, just the more bliss you have. After you get the point, you say, why the heck am I just involved in this five sense realm? Why am I just taking all this suffering? You know, of having to see, to hear, to smell, to taste, to touch, to have a body with all its aches and pains, trying to put it in this position and that position, and it doesn't get better, it gets worse with age. And seeing things I like, then the things I don't like, hearing all these sounds. Maybe a nice Dhamma discourse, but then I hear a crow or a frog just croaking all night. Hear the person in the next room snoring, somebody farting, whatever it is. Why do I have to hear all this stuff? And after a while you find out you don't have to hear it. You don't have to feel it. You can let go. Why is it we don't let go? Fear. This is attachment. This is the obsession. This is the habit which we have of always holding on to a body. It's got us a body so many times throughout samsara. It's not the first body we've had. It's not the first sickness we've had. Just so often, so many lifetimes we've been going through this. Why do we have to go through this? Because we keep on picking up a body. We keep on wanting to express ourselves in the five sense realm. We can even fantasize about what we're going to do in that five sense realm. With wealth and riches and sex and goodness knows what else which you have as pleasures in that world. Please know that even in the most refined of five sense realms, even the heavenly realms, that is nowhere near as good as when those five senses completely disappear. When you don't take up any of the five senses, when you completely let them go. As the Buddha said, and as I said at the beginning of the sutta, Sabbe dharma nalang abhinivesaya. And no dharma is worth clinging to. Certainly not the five sense realm. You can see that very easily. So don't worry what you eat. Don't worry about your body. Don't matter about what sounds, smells, tastes, touches. See if you can let them all go. Renounce and go inside. It's as if those five senses sort of on the outside, if you go to the very center of them, you go beyond them by going into them. It's just like many people have found out, you go beyond pain, not by running away from it, but by going into it, facing it, going right into its center. It's by going in that you get beyond. Because when you're going in, you're going against the asavas, going against the stream. You're not attaching, you're letting go. You're not craving, you're not going out there. You're going in here. As you go in your meditation, you get to the point when those five senses disappear. This is what we mean by getting to the stage of nimittas. Because when the five sense disappears, then this is what replaces them, an image of your mind. But to be able to recognize that image, the mind needs to be strong and pure and energized. Otherwise it's just too weak and sometimes you don't even notice it. You can't see a nimitta. Which is why that we always practice, you know, the purities, you know, doing offerings, practicing sila, virtue, doing services for each other, doing chanting, doing some beautiful chanting like the Anattalakkhana Sutta. Learning the Pali so we understand exactly what it means, and that's a fantastic sutta. and give you so much happiness and piti sukha. Just reflect upon that. That was the first time that people other than the Buddha became fully enlightened. That was the first 5 arahats next to the Buddha became enlightened because of that sutta. That was history. That was an amazing time. When you start to reflect upon just the setting and the essence of that teaching. Nothing in here, anatta. It's not in your control. When you start to reflect upon that, that starts getting piti sukha coming up. You're purifying your mind. You're giving it energy. You're giving it power. So much so that when you let go of the 5 senses, what comes up is the beautiful nimittas. If you're being lazy, if you're being fault-finding, if you're being negative, if you're not keeping all the monastic rules, if you're being sloppy, not cleaning your hut, not washing your bowl before you come out to the meal, whatever it is, if you're being sloppy, you can have a sloppy mind. Which means when the 5 senses do disappear, you just get pretty much dullness, or a very dull nimitta, not enough to sort of take you further. And if the nimitta's not dull, you haven't got the energy, the bliss, then fear, uncertainty will actually just make you just go looking for something to disturb yourself, looking for something to distract yourself. The asavas will just go and play. You'll take up things in the world, take up things to think about. The problems which have just no relation to your monastic life, dreams, fantasies, plans, which you know it's just a waste of time, but you do that just for something to do, just to express this dua. But when you start going deeper in your meditation, you can actually notice those asavas and notice how much pain they cause. You can see just why the mind takes up things, why it craves, and you can cut it off. You can see that dua in action, the subtle movement of the mind, the first movement of the asava, where it starts going out. You understand why. Fear, lack of energy, lack of full understanding of the true nature of things. The more you contemplate anatta, the easier again it is to stay inside, because the mind knows, you know there's no one there. You're weakening that power, weakening that fear, through reflection and contemplation, especially if you overcome that fear through bliss. Then when you get to the stage of the nimitta, the mind doesn't do anything. It doesn't go looking for sounds to disturb itself. It doesn't go looking for aches and pains in the body. It doesn't even go looking for thoughts. Thoughts are just the echo of the 5 sense realm. Because all your thinking is all about that 5 sense realm usually. That's why it's an echo of that realm. It really belongs to the realm of the 5 senses. If you let it all go, renounce, relinquish, abandon, let go, contentment, leaving it alone, freeing the mind, all those beautiful words, and all you're left with is this beautiful nimitta. And the mind doesn't move, because the asavas have been stopped. Remember what those asavas are? What are they? The kama asava, avijja asava, and what bar? What's the other one? Not bhava asava, it's avijja asava. Sorry? It's bhava asava. Yeah, okay, the bhava asava. The outgoing of just being. I'll go into that later on, because I already actually mentioned it. The coarser form of being is doing. Sort of doing things. But when you cut those off, the asavas, they can't go out anymore. The mind stays still. It doesn't move anymore. And when the mind doesn't move, the nimitta doesn't move. That's what we call contentment. You're happy to be here. There's no wobbling, there's no moving, there's no doing, there's no going anywhere. It's called stillness. It's called samadhi. One peak of mind. As I pointed out many years ago, just one pointedness or one peak of mind, it doesn't just mean just in space, it also means in time as well. A sustained attention, which doesn't move. Doesn't move means stay still, stays there for many, many moments linked together. So what happens? Just the mind doesn't move. One object for many moments in succession. And that's where you start to really build up power. Nimitta gets strong, incredibly strong, blissfully strong. And you don't move, you don't do anything, you don't go anywhere, because you're still, the arsenals have been shut off. You've seen this through your insight. You've seen where craving, upadana, the attachments, the arsenals come from. You've cut it off. When you cut it off, you go into the jhanas. Because the nimitta becomes very still, it builds up energy, and the energy just gets so strong, it just completely overwhelms one. And we get stuck in these beautiful states of non-doing. One of the great results, one of the great rewards of gaining jhanas, is actually to be in states where the doer doesn't exist for many hours. You actually see what it's like when you fully overcome that source of an asava, source of craving, source of upadana, the doer. When you actually can see that, completely overcome, you understand why the jhanas last for such a long time. There's nothing to destroy them or disturb them. The whole root of disturbance has been suppressed. That's why I say, and it's not just theory, say that if it's a jhana, it lasts for long periods of time. The deeper the jhana, the longer it lasts. Hours sometimes, even days, sitting down doing absolutely nothing. Mind so still, it can't move. And that's not a state of fear or discomfort, but states of great bliss. Huge amounts of bliss. More bliss than you've ever experienced, or ever hoped to experience, or even could ever imagine could exist in this universe. It's the sort of blisses which can come up. When the mind starts to move away from those blisses, when the karma, this is K-A-R-M-A now, or K-A-M-M-A, starts to dissipate, then the mind comes out. And you start to see the mind moving again. The doer starts to come back to life. And you can see very easily where it's coming from. Sometimes it's just the bad habits. If you can cut off that bad habit right there, see that what the doer is, why it works. Realize that it's just a process, an empty process. Not a being, not a self. Just see as a process. Then you can completely let go of that part of the defilements. What you're left with is one of the biggest of the asavas, the last bit of it, the bhavasava. Really, if you just let go of the karma dhanha and karma upadana and the karma asava, you just let go of that much, then you're an anagami, a non-returner. You've seen that five sense realm for what it is. Just a place where you don't want to play around anymore. A place where there's nothing for you. Just a place of disturbance, of irritation, of distraction. It's interesting to know that all this world is just such a disturbance. Seeing a beautiful flower. This is the springtime now in Western Australia. People come from all over the world to see wildflowers. How stupid are they? They're just disturbing their senses again. Why just, as men in this monastery, do you just go looking after ladies? Women looking after men? It's just disturbing yourself, that's all. Why do we listen to music? Just disturbing this beautiful tranquility of the mind. For an anagami, you're not into that disturbance anymore. You only come out when you have to do your duties. Otherwise, you stay inside, inclining towards renunciation, inclining towards aloofness. Why? Because you've cut off that asava. How have you cut it off? By seeing this doer, who always wants to assert itself, to be something, to be the doer, the maker, the builder, the author, the one in charge. When you see that as just an empty process, no one in there, that's where the asavas, those asavas stop. Of course, it's still that last of the asavas, the last part of bhavasava to overcome. Because it's not just with doing that you give yourself a sense of existence, although that's 99% of it. The difference between the anagama and the arahat is not just overcoming the doer, but also completely letting go of the knower. The knower here, the mind, the jitta, that which knows, that which sees, hears, or that's which is behind all this seeing and hearing, that part of the mind which can cognize, not just see but know you've seen something, not just hear but know you've heard it, this mind business. As you go into the deeper jhanas, you find that the block between the first and the second and the third, is always attachment to knowing. It is a very refined part of bhavasava, or even bhavasava. It is the attachment, or even the bhava dhanha, the craving to be. Because after a while you get used to knowing but not doing. You get used to the jhanas, it's another expression of your existence. It's a weird one at first, but later on you can get accustomed to it, and it's not that challenging yet. Which is why that even people with jhanas sometimes don't see the truth. But as you get into the jhanas deeper and deeper, you find more and more of the knowing disappears. And if you take yourself, your essence, your atta, to be any part of knowing, any part of consciousness, if you take that to be you, you'll have a barrier to going into the deeper jhanas. You have a barrier to cessation. That is the last of the attachments there, the last of the barriers. It is that bhavasava would take you from a fourth jhana to a third jhana. I want to know. My knowing needs to expand, not just from equanimity, but needs to expand to know pity, to know sukha. To go back into the first jhana and have a bit of a wobble so it can know it knows. Go away from the non-duality of second jhanas. To be able to do that, or rather to do that, all comes from this bhavasa of wanting to go out there and express its knowingness. And this is actually the last of those asavas. When you start to see that the more one goes out from the deeper jhanas into the back to the second or the first, that's just suffering. What are you doing that for? You realize there's an attachment to the knower. By attachment means you take up the knower to be important. You raise it up. Upadana. Upa. Same basically English word up or close to. And adana, to take it up. The asava, the mind goes out to know itself and to think it exists. The great delusion. When it goes inside rather than out, it goes into the very heart of the jitta. This is what the journey of the jhanas are, going deeper and deeper into the center of the jitta. You just go all the way through jhanas, any material attainments, until it stops. The jitta stops. You go to the end of mind. Not to the consequences of mind. Not to where the mind leads to, but where it comes from. Go right to its heart and see it is completely empty. Nirodha, cessation. nothing there at its heart. Void. My me alai, as Ajahn Chah would say. Nothing there. That's where you stop that last of the asavas, the bhavasava. That's where you stop bhavadadha, the craving to be. It's fascinating just how people just want to be something. As they want to do and they want to be. Why? Sometimes they say, well, I got all this way into Nibbana, so I want to be there to enjoy it when it happens. Do I really have to let go of everything? Why not? Why does anyone want to keep anything? It's craziness. The Buddha said, as I mentioned in the beginning of this talk, Sabbe Dhamma Nalang Abhinivesaya. Sort of all dhammas, not just all conditioned things, unconditioned things, a whole lot. Everything. You couldn't have actually said it in a more comprehensive way when he said Sabbe Dhamma. There's no other way in part of saying just a whole lot, everything. He said Nalang, it's not worth Abhinivesaya, keeping. You don't even keep the knower. Nothing is worth keeping. The whole lot gets thrown away. But the point is, why is it that people reject that? Why is it we say that can't be true? Why is it that sometimes when I talk like this, people have christened this Ajahn Brahm's black hole, you know, theory of Nibbana? Why is it people reject this? It's always because of the craving, the attachments there. I just want to be. Please, Ajahn Brahm, leave me some teeny weeny bit of existence where I can still exist. Anywhere, just even if it's a small, tiny, little part, I don't care, as long as you leave me something. And if you're a person who just still wants to exist somewhere, wherever it is, the ground of being, unmanifest consciousness or whatever, if you still want to be somewhere, that is called craving to be. That is called the attachment of being. That's called the asava of being. That is why you'll never see the Dhamma, never see Nibbana. Because you just want to be. It's a very strong and powerful, the last of the attachments is craving to be. It's so hard to overcome. There's only one way of overcoming it. Basically getting to the jhanas and go deep into the jhanas. To see being disappear. That which you took to be essential. That which you was so obvious to the unenlightened mind. Was always there, will always will be there. You start to see it disappear and fade away. Scary, but real. It's pacha tangwe ditabo vinyuhi. To be seen for oneself. By those who can truly see vinyuhi, those who can see deeply into things, those who get into jhanas and see those jhanas, not just seen by the intellectuals or the professors, but seen by the meditators. You see it for yourself. There's no one in here, nothing at all. No doer, no knower. And this is the culmination of the practice. It's not annihilation, because there wasn't anyone in there in the first place to be annihilated, just this empty process. Just like the flame going out. Flame just depends upon the wick, the heat, and the wax. It's not, and flame is never annihilated. It's just a conditioned process. Once the fuel, the upadana, is seen, then cut off, the flame just dies. Fades, goes away, there's nothing left. No one to cry for nothing left, because there was nothing there to begin with. There is no Sangha in this monastery, there is no Ajahn Brahm, there are no visitors, there are no cats, no kangaroos. There's nothing inside, just this process of samsara. So every time we meditate, we get so far, we can't go further because we want to stay with what we've got. We want to keep this. We don't want to give up anymore. You have to give up everything. As Ajahn Chah used to say, when one of his favourite sayings in the early first year, I think, when I was at Wat Bapong, he had these, and like everywhere else, they have these fashions and fads, and for that one year, the fashion was to say, "Have you come here to die?" He would say to the monks, even if they just ordained temporarily, say to them, "Have you come here to die?" And what he meant there was, "Have you come here for the self to die? That which you take to be you. Have you come here to allow the doer to die? The will to be killed. Have you come here for your knowing to die, to fade away? For the mind to completely vanish with nothing left? Is that what you come here for? If you come here for that, then I wish you all the best of luck to find that and get into Nirvana and have the time of your life, or the time of your death, or the time of your enlightenment, whatever you call it. Bliss, 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 bliss. Emptiness, emptiness, emptiness. Find out, alas, the end of things." So to summarize this talk, when you're meditating, whenever you come across a barrier, look to see what you're taking up, what you're holding on to, and why. Look at the doing. If it's still outside of jhana, it's doing is a problem. Somewhere there you're doing. Somewhere there you're sort of getting involved. Somewhere there there's the will, the controller, the builder, the complainer. Check that out and stop it. No more doing. Go in the opposite direction. In. The doing goes out. Non-doing, letting go, putting things down, goes in. And you know that you let go of that attachment just when you go into a deeper stage. You find yourself falling in to a deeper stage of samadhi. Deeper into the breath, deeper into no breath, nimittas. Deeper into nimittas. That's why all the ajahns, all the teachers say, whenever you get to these stages, don't do anything, be still, watch. But please don't interfere. If you interfere, you're just giving rise to more of the doing, more karma dhanha, karma asama, because that's what you do. Go out there and disturb the world. Don't disturb anything. Put things down, throw things away. Allow the whole process to show you there's nothing in here. Go to that empty cave in the heart. Every time there's a barrier, find out why, and overcome that barrier. The next barrier, find out why, overcome it. Next barrier, find out why, overcome it. That's how you go deeper into the meditations. You don't go deeper just through willpower. You go deeper through wisdom power. You go deeper through the wisdom which sees non-self. The more you understand non-self, the more you understand the asavas and the opposite of the asavas, letting go, giving up, contentment, metta, whatever. The more you'll be able to go deeper in. When you go to that last stage on the edge of the jhanas, just please give up the doer once and for all. Take a chance. Have that bliss, the power of the mind, to overcome that last bit of fear of letting go something so personal. Deep attachment. Bliss out. And understand after blissing out what happened and why. Understand that there is no essence to a doer. Just conditioned, habit, that's all. And then at least you may have the chance to be an anagami, so you never come back again to this world. Five sense world, you just have not had enough of it yet. At least come and die to the five senses in the body. So when this body dies, you don't have to take another one again. See the end of the knower. There's nothing in here. So you can actually in this lifetime make an end of it all. An utter lakana sutta. You get nibbida towards rupa, towards the world outside. Nibbida towards vedana. Nibbida towards perception. Nibbida towards sankharas. Nibbida towards vijnana, consciousness, the knower. You get nibbida to all the vijnanas, not just the five senses, but mano vijnana, the citta as well. nibbida. Just fed up with it. Had enough. From that comes viraga. The whole lot fades away and disappears. And from viraga, we got, what is it, nirodha vimutti. Cessation and freedom. And that's the end. And you know that what's done has been done. What had to be done has been done. So make an end of it this lifetime. Make an end of it this retreat. Now you've got the opportunities here. So use your wisdom power while you're meditating. And see what upadana truly is. Find out what cause is craving. See the asavas in action. And undermine them. So the mind never moves out at all, but just goes in and in and in to the end. So that's this evening's talk.
Supatipanno Bhagavato Sāra.